The Jump Around 3.0. I am Jim Rutledge. He is Brad Nortman. We're going to reflect on the Badgers' loss to Alabama, the injury to Tyler Van Dyke. We'll also see what the new expectations are for Badger football, and we're excited to hear from NFL Hall of Famer and Badger legend Joe Thomas later in the show. You can see me. I'm wearing my Iron Jock. The Jump Around is outfitted by the Iron Jock. Use the promo code ESPN30 for 30% off all purchases over $50 at ironjock.com. That's Iron Jock with a C. Brad, the Badgers, tough game against Alabama, but I want to start with a few things that honestly gave me some hope for this team, because it ended ugly at 42-10, but TVD looked really good when he was out there, and let's start with that part of it. I know he's not going to be playing going forward, but the offense looked functional against a top 10 team full of NFL players, and I think that's something to build on as we look for reasons to be excited for the rest of the season.
Yeah, you know, I actually did pregame and then went into the game. So I was able to watch it from the press box. Felt pretty awesome, not going to lie, watching it from the press box and seeing the stripe out that the student section put on. So it was a great environment, which I have very little doubt that Madison would be able to do that. But you're exactly right, Jim. I mean, the offense started off pretty good. Badgers got the ball. It wasn't explosive plays, right? But it was methodical. It was you working your way down the field. And they looked to be in a little bit of a rhythm. The student section, the stadium was behind them. And then, of course, Tyler Van Dyke gets that devastating injury that will now put him out the rest of the year. And to me, that sucked a lot of life out of the stadium. It sucked a lot of energy and oxygen out of the stadium. And they hung in there for a little bit, making a field goal, and then eventually, you know, having them forced to miss field goal. And then, you know, the fumble from Ches Malusi was a real killing turning point. But it's hard because I'm under the impression that they held some things back the first couple weeks, right? They held some explosive plays, maybe some trickery, some of the generic next level offensive game plan that you're going to do throughout the season, right? Setting up one thing to do another, whether it be within a game or within a season. You never quite got to see that, which is frustrating. And it leaves me with a bad taste in my mouth, one, because of the way the Badgers played, mistakes when you couldn't make mistakes, but also with a little bit of an incomplete, right? Because the grand idea was, let's get Tyler Van Dyke, a veteran, in there. We're going to develop him. We're going to get him running this offense and get clicking. And now we'll never see what that would have looked like or what that would have been. And now we're looking at Braden Locke and Mabry Metower. Am I pronouncing that
Metoyer.
Right? Metoyer.
Okay. I had my struggles too, Brad. Okay. So that's why Metoyer. I know it now. And thanks to Ryan for helping me with that. So.
Metoyer.
Got you guys.
So I feel a little bit like incomplete, yeah, as far as not being able to know what this offense could have been when they were humming, when they have fully unleashed. And look, I don't think they would have won the game, and maybe they would have scored one more touchdown. There was a huge gap in talent and a huge gap in execution, right? They made mistakes that you just can't make.
Yep.
But at least for the rest of the season, I was dying to know how this unfolded, and we're just not going to be able to see that.
And I don't know how many of those mistakes, because it's not like this team was flawless in the first two games, but we're trying to do too much. When you get a team, when you get Ches Malusi, who's not someone I think you're going to expect to put the ball on the ground, and like, are you trying to make a play because you know at this point you're looking for a Hail Mary type play? So I don't know how much of that was in there. The other part of it is, Brad, and it was 14-3, and they had an opportunity to either score a touchdown or kick a field goal. And I'm not going to put it on the kicker because it's not like, oh, this is why they lost. But they had a realistic chance to go in at halftime, not far-fetched, down 14-6. Because I think if he makes that field goal, then Alabama probably just kneels it if they don't get the return they're looking for. And that's that. That's because you got to account for the return time, and that just cuts out a little more time in there. Instead, not only do they miss it, Badgers, I don't know if it was the players or the coaches, were not ready for, I think it was three, maybe four plays, and that was the ball game. Like, right there, Brad, it was like, hey, you got a fighting chance. Maybe Locke makes a few plays. Players don't try to get outside of themselves, and you could do something and be excited. Imagine how excited the fans would be and the players if they were down 14-10 or 14-6 to Alabama, which was within, what, 30 seconds, 40 seconds of happening, and instead it goes devastating, what, 21-3, and to me that was the ballgame.
You're exactly right. I said this in postgame. It was my initial reaction was, if you're an average team, even just a good team, if you're a bad team, you certainly do this, yeah. But you open the door, right? And then great teams step through the door every time. And that's just what the Badgers did right there. They opened the door, and then the Alabama Crimson Tide just stepped right on through it, and then they slammed it behind them. And it happened in that moment. And I know this is the case in the NFL, because NFL special teams coordinators would preach it all the time. The highest likelihood of any given drive scoring happens after a missed field goal. Not a punt, not a turnover, not an onside kick. I mean, whatever else. The highest likelihood of any given offense scoring on any given possession happens after a missed field goal. The momentum turn is so stark. There really is an internal victory to where the opposing team looks at it, and even the kicking team says there's already a mental accounting of 3 points on the board. And when the kick is missed, that 3 points come on, and the defense just felt like, hey, we just got away with one. So the momentum, the tide turning, is so critical, and that's all Alabama needed. And then they just literally rolled the rest of the game. So there's a lot of things that go into a loss like this. But I was starting to leave the stadium to get to postgame at that point, but watching it, and I felt the same thing. Get it to a one-score game, you feel really good about it, and then within a matter of, no joke, of, I mean, what is that in game time? Like 1 minute in game time and 4 minutes of real lifetime, it felt like the game was over, and Alabama just ran with it the rest of the way. So critical moments, and when it comes to trying to beat an Alabama team, when we talked about this on this program last week, we thought Wisconsin's going to have to bring their A-plus game, and Bama's probably going to have to play a C game. I think Bama probably played a B game, maybe an A game. And Wisconsin probably played their C or D. Yeah. So they just didn't do enough to pull off an upset like this.
You could be a winner. I wish the Badgers were winners. They'll win the bye week at least. You can go to Ho-Chunk Gaming Madison. That's where winners go. Millions of dollars are won every single weekend. Just the weekend at Ho-Chunk Gaming Madison. Go win the weekend. Go be a winner. Go to Ho-Chunk Gaming Madison. Usually over 500 jackpots per week, and it's 500-plus people winning money at Ho-Chunk Gaming Madison over the weekend. This is the Jump Around 3.0. I am Jim Rutledge alongside former Badger Brad Nortman. Let's get on to life without Tyler Van Dyke. He is done for the season. The Wisconsin State Journal, the first to break that news. And I know we're going to talk about this a little bit with Joe Thomas a little bit later, but this air raid offense, and we can talk about what this team will be and all that. One of the biggest thorns in the side of trying to figure out if this offense even works is that now 2 years in a row, you have a guy, and last year it was Tanner Mordecai who went down, big arm and athletic. He didn't look it, but he was athletic. And then you had Tyler Van Dyke, big arm, athletic. They both go down. Those are the two prototype quarterbacks for this offense. And they go down early enough, especially Van Dyke, where you don't really know what this offense could have been. They didn't look like they were going to be a 10-win team, but could they have been a team that gives you something to build on and you feel like you could run the air raid? We don't know. And now you have Braden Locke coming in, who is, I'm just going to point out, I'm not trying to rip him. That's not what I'm here for. But he is a shorter quarterback at 6 feet tall. I think he's averaging 2 or 3 passes knocked down per game. He does not have a elite arm. He's not an elite athlete. And this offense is kind of based on running around a quarterback. So before we get to Mabry Matoyer, who I don't know if he's ready. I honestly don't have a clue on that. They have a bye week here. Hopefully they'll get him closer to ready. I know Coach Fickell said he better be ready because he's one play away now. But let's focus the quarterback they have with Braden Locke. And Brad, the question I'll pose to you, and it reminded me a little bit of the Packers here, is when the Packers had to play Malik Willis last week, and if you are just watching now, it looks like Jordan Love might be playing this week with two straight days of practice. But they created an offense around Malik Willis. They didn't change their playbook. They just pulled the plays out that Malik could run and that would be effective for this team, which is a lot of running the football. Is with the bye week here, this is an opportunity, I think, Brad. It's different in college because they got other things to do. But to be able to say, you know what, let's just strip away all the plays that Braden can't do. Let's not get cute. Let's not even involve them. Let's get back to bread and butter, and maybe this is our version of Badger football. You have Ches Malusi. You have Cade Iaccamelli. You have Walker as well, Tui Walker, and then you also have Darian Dupree. Maybe you're trying to get these running backs out there and use end-arounds with the receivers, whatever you already have in your playbook. You're not going to be able to design up new plays, but lean on those plays instead of this more traditional air raid offense that Phil Longo likes to run, because I don't think Braden Locke can actually run that offense.
Well, this is where it gets interesting, right? Because what I have observed from this coaching staff, whether it be Tressel on defense or Longo on offense, it's a lot of, this is what we run, and you guys need to adjust to it, right? I mean, there really was no consideration of, look, I know that you guys were Coach Christ and Coach Leonard's guys, and so maybe we're going to change our scheme to put you guys in better positions. That's not what I gather is going on. I gather that these offensive and defensive coordinators, right or wrong, they're committed to their system, and it's on the player to form to the system. I think that's what caused a lot of issues last year. I think you start to see a little bit more of a comfort level with the guys this year, offense and defense, and maybe guys that fit the scheme better. But with that being said, this is where it'll be interesting on how much Coach Longo does change things for Braden Locke, because you're completely right. I mean, he does look small out there on the field. I don't know how you possibly see over offensive linemen to make certain throws. So does Coach Longo and Braden Locke have a bit more of a dialogue? Do they take the bye week to say, this is what I'm comfortable doing, this is what I'm not comfortable doing, here's how we can tilt the offense in our favor? Because what for those negatives, the positives I believe and that I've heard about Braden Locke is that he's really, really smart. I think he has a really good grasp on the offense, and he's very smart. And the other thing is, he's got an accurate arm. He's just got to get comfortable just letting it rip. You could tell early in the Bama game, he just was not comfortable, and he was just a little bit erratic. But when he is comfortable, he got a good zip, and he is accurate, and he's smart. So how can you use that to your ability? That's where Coach Longo and Braden Locke have to go to the drawing board and say, this is the area of the offense we should emphasize. This is what we should stay away from. Because he's a very different quarterback from Tyler Van Dyke. And it just goes to the question that I think I feel, and I think a lot of the fans feel, particularly evaluating the air raid. With Tyler Van Dyke, you felt like maybe this was closer to, I'm going to use the term, a finished product. As though, therefore, we can start to evaluate it. With Braden Locke, I don't know if this is going to be able to be the finished product air raid that we're hoping for, to where we can even evaluate, hey, this is working for Wisconsin, or you know what, this is the final version of it and still not working. That's where, to me, I don't think you go to Metoyer. I think I said that right this time. I don't think you go to Metoyer right away. I think you let Braden Locke have it. But if it goes to the point where, I don't know what kind of circumstances would make for it, but I am curious to see Metoyer in there, because if there's at least a promise that, look, this is our dude, this is the guy that we hand-selected to take the reins of the program that is tailor-made to run air raid, I would almost like to see him get some reps to build for the future, even if it's not very pretty.
Right, and a couple of things off of that. So I believe you can play, and this also brings into, I don't know if Tyler Van Dyke could get an extra year because of the injury so early.
That's a good point.
That is one thing to keep an eye out for. But also, I believe freshmen can play, or you can play four games before you lose your red shirt. I think
it's a
fifth.
Lot of games. That's
it
pretty
is.
Wild.
So you look at it, Wisconsin's got USC and then Purdue. You'd at least give Braden Locke, obviously, the USC game, which will be tough, and you got Purdue at home. You're at Rutgers and at Northwestern. Wisconsin, no matter what, has to feel like they can win those. So they're still going to be in the business of trying to get a bowl win. And then you have Penn State and Iowa. But could you see Metoyer coming in? And again, I don't even love Oregon, but could you have him playing at Nebraska or that home game Minnesota or the bowl game? Have him play a few games late. The schedule's tough. There's no easy way to get him in there. But I think, one, you're going to try to let Locke get as many games in. Basically, right now we're playing a counting game. You need four more victories. At this point, I've adjusted my expectations to get to a bowl game. And I think Purdue, Rutgers, and Northwestern are all winnable, two of those on the road. And I think Minnesota, those are the ones I feel like, and especially those are the ones I feel like the Badgers can win. The other ones are definitely coin flips. I'm not saying they can't beat Iowa, but with Locke back there or a youngster or Nebraska the way they're looking, it looks different. And I think I'm with a lot of Badger fans, and we sit here and go, how is it that, you know, Raiola can come in and play right away and star for Nebraska, and Wisconsin has a four-star quarterback that, by all accounts, isn't ready? And from what I've read during the preseason was that in spring camp and fall camp that Metoyer, he's moving up. He obviously passed, I think Cole LaCroix was his name, and then there was, and then obviously Evers who left and Burkett who left, that he's climbed up the depth chart to be the clear three, and now he's the number two. But as far as reps available to him, they weren't there, and he's still a guy that I think needs time. And it is counterintuitive because this whole time I was like, this offense should be a lot simpler. This isn't a pro-style offense. This should be an offense that someone should be able to run pretty quickly, but by some accounts, that's why Evers left, because he couldn't pick up the offense enough. So hopefully Metoyer, with more reps and an opportunity coming in play, because he's athletic. He's 6'4". He's got the arms. So he is your prototypical guy to run this. So to your point, and I will just talk about adjusted expectations here, and this is the Jump Around 3.0. This is our new Badger Digital show. We have Joe Thomas coming up a little bit later. Jim Rutledge and Brad Nortman with you. It's brought to you in part by Simden Chevy in Mount Horeb. I drove my big blue truck, and I got a coffee at a Panera here, and I was there, and they saw my big blue truck, a fan of the show, a fan of the station, and asked me, hey, are you Jim Rutledge? I said, yeah. They go, how'd you recognize me? He goes, I saw the big blue truck from Simden Chevy in Mount Horeb, and then actually I had someone out here fixing a washer, and he didn't recognize it from the radio, but said, hey, what's with this? What's this TurboMax? And I said, it's like a diesel engine, but it's not. It gets you the gas mileage, and you can tow nearly 10,000 pounds, which is what I needed. And you can ask Simden Chevy in Mount Horeb about that TurboMax engine on that Silverado, which is what I drive. But, Brad, I guess I'll ask you, first I'll tell you my adjusted expectations here, is that, one, I want 6 wins. I need the bowl eligibility. It's not impossible. There's a path to it. You can't dink around. Maybe you pull off an upset there. Identify what this team does well, something. And I think it's a bit dramatic. I still think their linebackers are really good, so I think they develop linebackers well. I think their secondary is really good. I think it's the front that is the problem defensively, so I do think defensively there's a identity with fast and quick and strong linebackers who are making plays, and same with the secondary. And offensively, I think you got to lean into that run game. But one, get bowl eligible. To have some forward momentum in the next season. So obviously I think that means getting Metoyer in there at some point and maybe playing Dupree, maybe getting some of these young guys feel excited. And then the last bit is you got to figure out, and I'm not talking about letting people go or not, but like you got to figure out, does this Trestle defense work and does this Longo offense work? Because if the Badgers have another 6-win season, they get bowl eligible, Coach Fickell is likely going to have to make some changes and maybe adjust what they do at Wisconsin, because he's going to be here, rightfully so, but maybe there's an adjustment to, even if they like the air raid, it's not being run, if it continues to look like this. So to me, it's figuring out what offenses run, what offense works here, who's the right person to run it at OC and quarterback, and same thing in defense. Is this the right defense? Do they modify it? Answering those questions, but then also getting bowl eligible. That's my new bare minimum.
Yeah, Jim, those are good. I'm right there with you. I agree. I don't think, nor should, Coach Fickell is anywhere near a hot seat. With that being said, though, he has some decisions to make as far as how he wants this program to look and figure out what is right. And so for me, for my expectations, I'm right there with you with bowl eligibility. I know that people shun bowls and decrease the importance of it. And look, they're not that important, right? But with the Wisconsin bowl streak, I think that's an important streak. I think that says a lot about the program. I think it says a lot about what the floor of the program is. That, you know what, even in years where you and I as Badger fans and everyone listening as Badger fans are not satisfied, and this is like a low watermark, you still have a winning season, you're still bowl eligible. So I think that matters a lot. So bowl eligibility, and it's attainable. It's not like they have to beat, you know, all the ranked opponents. You're just beating teams that you should beat historically for the Wisconsin Badgers. So that's one for me. A big one is win the Axe. I still think that is an important rivalry, and I think that it's just an important rivalry for me as a player. So win the Axe. Bowl eligibility, win the Axe. And these are then a little bit more forward-looking. They are 26th right now via 24/7 Sports. You can pick any sort of recruiting rankings that you want. I just like that one. So right now, based on that, they're 26th in recruiting for the class of 2025. I want to see them in the top 20. I know that they've already got a lot of commits, and a lot of commits already at that point, but they stand behind Nebraska, Rutgers, Maryland, and Washington. Those are the teams that stand ahead of them, and those are all like 19 to 23. So, look, you know, one guy's the star, one guy's that star. That might shift it, but that's kind of the upper middle of the Big Ten that you're trying to always get ahead of. So, for me, Wisconsin, get a couple more important recruits because that is your pipeline, and those will be quote-unquote Fickell's guys to help evaluate him. So get in the top 20, particularly jump those mid-tier Big Ten teams, mid to upper tier. And I just want to see, I want to see one complete game, offense, defense, where you walk away saying, you know what? This is what they're trying to do. Offense, defense, domination in both forms, whether that be explosive plays in the offense where you're scoring points, not necessarily at will, but it looks like I have very healthy offense and a defense that's fast and physical and it's kind of suffocating. I think those are the adjectives that they would want to use. I don't care if it's Purdue. I don't care if it's Northwestern. I don't care if it's Minnesota. I want to see one complete game by this team where you walk away and you're like, you know what? I think this is what they're going for. It was against an inferior opponent, but I'm starting to see it come together.
I like all of those. And again, we'll wrap up the show on this. We got Joe Thomas. I should say wrap up the show. Wrap up Brad and I just talking, you know, talking ball. We've got Joe Thomas coming up here in a minute. But this is the Jumper on 3.0. Before we get to Joe, Brad, I wanted to talk about Tennessee with a talent fee that they're putting on tickets. And I love it. And I think it can go towards a lot of things. One, for players, because I'm sorry, and I saw a lot of Badger fans. I saw Jen Gabe and Chewy put a poll up, and people are voting no. Then you don't want to compete. Like, I don't know what to tell you otherwise. Like, if you don't want to pay the $10 in talent fee for the ticket, then you don't want to compete. Like, don't sit here and cry about your team not being there, because I guarantee now that one team has done it, every team is going to do it. You need to have it. Look, yeah, you're right. Sometimes it's like you go to a restaurant. It's like, don't tell me you're charging me extra for using my credit card. Call it a cash discount. Like, there could have been a better branding as far as the talent fee for the players. You could have just built it into the cost of the ticket and not been so transparent with it, because people get mad when they get nickel and dimed. But I feel very quickly they're going to get over that in Tennessee. If Wisconsin wants to compete with the likes of Tennessee and the likes of the Big Ten, a talent fee makes a lot of sense. And also, I think tied to that, and I thought it was more of me, maybe it was anecdotal, but then I saw some paper stories in the State Journal and other places. The program needs money for Camp Randall. Now that they've added serving alcohol, Brad, it was, I know it's Bama, but still, like, they want to fill up the stadium. They want to bring these teams in. It took me an entire quarter, because I was trying to, we were sitting in the sun, it was a great spot. We were by the student section end zone. But as I was, we were like, it's hot. It was halftime. And we're like, we're going to go get a drink. Couldn't, like, we waited till about three quarters of the way through halftime. Could not make our way across the stadium, like in the causeway there, because the lines for beer were so long, and then the bathroom. But then as you work your way through, like, I was like, let's just try to go somewhere else, because I had been told, if, you know, like at a Brewer game, you have the grab and goes, go use those. Well, those, everything else was so backed up, those were backed up, and I ended up having to, like, work my way all the way around to, like, Bucky's locker room. And just kind of finishing the game there. One, because it was hot, but then two, it was like a more, like, I could find beer that way. So I guess my point is, they have a lot to do with the actual structure of the stadium to figure out how to be able to serve alcohol, how to be able to maximize dollars there. And there's a whole article written about how Camp Randall could use a modern upgrade to be able to make it more of an enjoyable game day experience. So, Brad, I'll leave it to that. The Badger, like all sports, the Badgers need money for players, but they also need money for facilities.
Yeah, I understand that argument. And when I saw this initially, that Tennessee was doing this, it rubbed me the wrong way. And here's why. It feels like it's never enough. It feels like it's just a bottomless pit that you just got to keep putting more and more money into. And you just don't know if you're ever going to see that come to fruition. Because if every other school does this, and then Wisconsin does it, then it's like, okay, well, then what else you need to do to get an edge? So to me, I think it's an innovative idea. I think it's a smart idea. I don't love it for this reason, though. I just look at it and say, the NCAA's dysfunction and, like, craziness is now becoming my problem, right? Like, I mean, it's not like the fans asked for this NIL era. Mm-hmm. It's not like we asked for players to get paid in such an uncapped capacity. So to me, I look at that and like, wait a minute, now it's my problem. It's financially my problem that like Wisconsin needs my financial help in order to compete. So I think that's where it rubs me the wrong way. It's just general frustration with the whole system where it's just like, you know what? This is the only way to compete now is to basically tax your fans. It just that's what rubs me the wrong way. But maybe that's just inevitable. And if that's inevitable and it's either that or Wisconsin is dreadful, then I guess I just need to make peace with the new ways of the world. But to me, I just get so frustrated with the NCAA, how this is handled, what the current landscape looks like, to where I'm like, wait a minute, this is now my problem? So I think that's my frustration with it.
Yeah.
There's no doubt, though, Wisconsin needs to get creative because you cannot fall behind in NIL. And this is a good approach to it. I don't have many great ideas, so it's not one for me to necessarily discourage, because it's a hard ask. I don't know how you get ahead amongst these other schools that have a seemingly endless stream and fans that are willing to raise their hand and say, yep, I will pay that tax.
Two things. One, and maybe Ryan can help, maybe Brad can. Who's this? I feel like it's a villain. I am inevitable. Like, I forget.
Is that Thanos?
That was Thanos. Yeah.
Okay, yes.
The Avengers.
Yes. Look, this is as you're wearing a shirt for the Milwaukee Brewers, who just won the division, who are always asking for money without any proper, like, hey, give us more money. We got to maintain our stadium. Do you get anything back? No. But we got to maintain our stadium. Build us a stadium. So college football is becoming more professional. Professional sports put their hands out and say, hey, come to a game, don't come to a game. I don't care. You're giving us money anyways. And so, unfortunately, like, that's what I liked about this college one. It's like, you're coming to a game. You're invested. Because what I don't want, Brad, which I don't think is too far away, how far away are we from the Camp Randall, the Badgers, and everyone else doing what what the Brewers have done, and everyone else says, hey, we're positively affecting the community. You should be giving us some money or some tax breaks and all that kind of stuff.
Property tax or something?
Look, every team does it, including the Brewers there. So, like, that's probably the next thing. Big businesses do it. There's big businesses across the state that get tax breaks because they say, oh, look at everything we're bringing in the community. So I know obviously colleges get breaks as well, but I'm more okay with, hey, you made a choice. You're going to the game. That's why I like this one. I get your point, Brad, but it's like, you're going to the game. You pay the extra $10 instead of like, hey, you live in this county, so give us a couple extra bucks.
I would say that your buy-in would be higher too. You'd be much more invested in the product, seeing that, like, okay, it's not just indirectly that my viewership or my attendance goes to the team. Now it's directly. I know that $10, it goes right to that product on the field.
Yep.
So I do think that you are right. I think you'd be more invested, and you are already self-selecting the most avid fans, right? So they're probably the people that would have less objection with it. So I'm right there with you. I guess I just shake my head and say, how did it come to this?
Yeah.
How did it come to this? And that's the old head in me playing in a different time. And maybe there's a little bit of jealousy behind it, saying, wait a minute, I didn't get this. I mean, I was on scholarship, so I was blessed. But a different time, for sure.
Yes, it is funny, Brad. It went from like, hey, let's allow these kids to run camps and make some money off of their name and likeness. This is not name and likeness. That's the one thing I wish they'd stop calling it that. This is pay for play.
This is
not name and likeness. This is pay for play. And I do think in the long run, I do think college football is trying to take some steps to try to equalize that playing field. But look, I guess for Wisconsin, they might hate this NIL right now, how it's going. But I feel like there's a lot of other schools that now can compete because they can get a few bucks and throw it at guys who are castaways or maybe would have gone to your point. Wisconsin's not losing people to Alabama necessarily or any at a higher rate than they would have in the past. What they're doing is losing those guys, like maybe Zach Brown from Florida, who came up here and was here, I think, in like 06 through 08, 09, who would have come up here and he developed and he played here and he got some time at the back end. Well, FAU might be like, hey, we'll throw you $10,000. You can stay home and let's go to school here. Then he's going to stay. Now, bad for Wisconsin, but good for a school like FAU where they're like, we can compete and now we got slightly better players. So there is, I think, not all negatives to the NIL, but they do have to figure out how to cap it, and they need to stop calling it NIL. They need to call it pay for play, because that's what it is.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. I just, a quick story. I remember obviously being a huge issue when I was playing. Huge. And, you know, obviously everything happened with Ohio State and free tattoos.
Yes.
Those guys lost out on a full year of eligibility. We went to a, me and the specialist one time went to a local municipal golf course, and a the attendant there was caught wind that we were Badger players and all that kind of stuff, and he's like, oh no, you don't, your money's no good here, you go ahead on the course. And we're like, we can't accept, like, yeah. Please take our $20 or else we're gonna get in trouble. That's how strict it was. Mm-hmm. And to see the pendulum swing so much so in 12 years, yeah, is just wild for me to see. So it is the way of the world. I just hope that Wisconsin can figure it out, because it is, until things change, it is the lifeline. It is the flow. It is the blood. It is the pulse of the program, whether you like it or not. I personally hope that things become more regulated so that it doesn't continue to spiral into, yes, so much dollars and kind of affect everything. But I think we're a long way from that, Jim. So I think it's just the reality that we have as we're in it right now.
I agree. We'll talk about that with Joe Thomas, along with some other topics. Joe Thomas is coming up next on The Jump Around.
Business owners, athletic directors, and coaches, huddle up. Ches Malusi here. Did you know that you can outfit your business or school in Iron Jock apparel? Premium gear infused with world-class silver ion technology for permanent odor protection at a wholesale price that no one else can touch. Anti-static, four-way stretch, wicking, cooling, and Iron Jock doesn't sell cheap cottons that shrink and fade. You'll love it. Get started at ironjock.com and click on Order My Gear. That's ironjoc.com. Order My Gear.
We are now joined by Hall of Famer Joe Thomas on the Jump Around 3.0. Jim Rutledge, Brad Nortman with you. And Joe, before we get into a lot of Badger talk, and I want to try to make that stuff as positive as possible, you've had an interesting couple months. Can you update everyone where you've been, what you've been up to? And it's good to see you back stateside.
Yeah, it's great to be back in Wisconsin. I was actually living in Germany for the last 9 months. I was over there coaching the Munich Ravens football team. They're in the European League of Football. So there's 17 teams in Europe throughout, mostly Germany, but all the other countries around Germany as well, that play in a pretty cool summer league. You're allowed 4 Americans on each team. And it was a great experience because I brought my whole family over there. My kids were going to school. And it was pro football almost as we know it in the States. And we just had such an amazing experience. But I'm really excited to be back in Madison for the right time of the year, which I just got back home last week. And NFL is going strong, college football going strong, coaching my son's 8-year-old flag football. So football season is in full force, which feels a little different than it did when I was in Europe.
Yeah, Joe, thanks for joining. It's a blast to have you. And, you know, you and I both went to Brookfield Central High School. You probably get a lot of, okay, when you say you went to Brookfield Central, oh, is that Brad Nortman's high school? You probably get that a lot. So apologies for that already. But I want to talk about the Wisconsin Badgers. And when you and I were being recruited, you know, we're Wisconsin guys. And to me, before the NIL era, the Wisconsin Badgers had some legitimate recruiting advantages, right? Whether it be high academics, winning program, the social experience. There's a few programs that can say all of those are top tier like Wisconsin. But now with the NIL era, I feel like my perspective and just my observation is those don't carry as much weight as they used to. So I just wonder, how can Wisconsin thrive in recruiting in an NIL era when I feel like all the natural advantages to being a great school experience and program don't carry as much weight as they were when you and I were being recruited?
Yeah, I think you're right, because obviously now you're essentially able to pay players, and so the programs that have the richest boosters are going to be the ones that are going to pay the players the most. And unfortunately for the Big Ten, we don't have quite as many wealthy boosters as they do in the SEC or down in Texas and some of those schools. So our natural advantage, because the money was even, because you made the players play for nothing, essentially. So we were able to kind of lean on some of those other things. So I think the key thing for us, because we'll never be able to compete with Texas, Alabama, some of those schools on an NIL paying the players standpoint. But for us, the key is going to be development, right? Because it's great to think that you can just buy all these great players, but you still have to develop them, right? And we know how many times you bring in a guy who's a five-star recruit and he doesn't turn out. Actually, when I was there, my 4 years, we had just as many guys that were walk-ons or no-star or one-star recruits that ended up becoming first-round draft picks and All-Americans as there was five-stars that did nothing for us. And so I think just because you're paying these guys more money, it does hurt you a little bit, because then maybe you can't target exactly the guy that you used to maybe want, or you can't win some of those recruiting battles by selling Wisconsin as a program, as an academic institution with the best social experience as far as partying and having a great time on campus. Where now the money is much bigger of a factor. But I think if you're developing guys and you're selling the fact that, hey, you know what, it's great to get $100,000 in NIL money now, but you know what, in the NFL, have you seen what they're paying these guys these days? Like, you get $30 million a year playing left tackle. And so if you come here, we're going to develop you better than anywhere else, like Wisconsin has done since Barry was here in the early 90s. And you know what? $30 million is more than $100,000. So let's look long-term. And so you got to sell sort of that long-term approach, that this is an investment in yourself as a football player or as a person, right? Because you're going to get a great academic degree if you come to Wisconsin. You're going to make incredible networking opportunities with the alumni. That's one of the biggest alumni networks from coast to coast in the country. So I think you just got to sell the players on the long-term prospects of coming to Wisconsin and try to tell them that, you know, it's a fool's game to go for the short-term advantages in an extra couple $100,000, which is a lot of money. I'm not saying it's not. Right, but when you're talking about developing a player and becoming an NFL player that's a first-round pick and maybe gets to their second contract, like, that's an investment in yourself to come to Wisconsin, because we can develop a player into a great football player, a great man with a lifetime of being able to make high salaries.
And I love that approach. And I think you can even use it to pluck players from, I mean, I think Tack Curtis is an example from USC, who was the first time around interested in Wisconsin, went to USC, maybe didn't get the playing time or didn't fit right. So now he's at Wisconsin. So he kind of saw the light and said, hey, NIL money's here, but also I have the opportunity to come to a school that's developed a lot of linebackers. And I love that. Joe, the other concern, though, would be the Badgers have to start winning / developing these players. Like, that's that other trade-off. You're talking about the program under Paul and Jim. So that's the other side of it. So how important is these next few years for the Badgers to be able to sell that they can develop pros?
Well, in the NFL, you usually get about 2 years to make a statement, to build a culture, and to turn your program around. College football, maybe 3 or 4 years. Sometimes even a little bit less if you have impatient boosters, if you're at a USC or at Alabama or Texas. But at Wisconsin, you know, it's kind of about a 4-year deal. And for Fickell and his staff, like, winning at the beginning is really important, because it allows you to get better recruits in year 3 and then in year 4. And that was one of the things being around Brett Bielema when he took over as the head coach my senior year that I saw. You know, they put an enormous amount of effort into recruiting the best guys they possibly could, into developing everybody early on. Not saying that you don't do that later on in your career, but I mean, you are so laser focused on getting that thing turned around in the first or second year, building your culture and bringing in the guys that you want to be there that can run your offense and that you can run your defense, because it's going to become something that is a self-fulfilling prophecy after you sell that it's a good program. And then now you show that you can develop players and you can be a winning team and you can develop these offensive linemen or linebackers or quarterbacks or whatever you're trying to sell and who you're trying to be in your program, that now the people that you're selling that to the next time are going to believe it because they're seeing the product on the field.
Yeah, Joe, you know, thinking about Wisconsin Badgers under Alvarez and Bielema and Crist, and for a minute under Leonard, I felt like the Badger identity was crystal clear. I mean, it had been established and had been reinforced for years and years and years. And as we're watching this as alum and fans, it looks like a Badger team that is just starkly different from the team that we've gotten to know over the course of 3 decades. How would you describe the team's identity? And if it hasn't been formed yet, what do you think the identity is that Coach Fickell and the new regime is trying to implement for this new look Wisconsin Badgers?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest question that I wanted answered when I walked out of the stadium against Alabama. And I think that's the biggest question that the program and Coach Fickell and his coaches have to answer right now. And it's not about getting in front of a microphone and telling everybody, hey, this is our identity. It's about showing us on Saturdays. And I saw a team against Alabama that made a lot of mistakes in critical situations that ran the ball pretty well. I mean, they were able to move the ball when they were running it, but then they fumbled twice, basically just coming out of their own red zone. And if you do that, you're giving points to the other team. And when you're playing the top teams in the country, you can't make mistakes in critical moments. You have an offsides on a third down that you're able to get off the field on defense, but all of a sudden, boom, it's an offsides, first down. Now you give Alabama another chance to score. And so I think the identity that I had when I was there on the teams with Barry and then with Brett in his first season and then with Paul was like, hey, we're going to be disciplined. We're not going to make mistakes. We're going to run the football. We'll take some shots down the field. We're going to play tough defense. We're not going to be able to do some of the things that you want to do maybe at the skill positions because we just can't recruit those type of players that teams from the South or in Texas, Florida are able to do. So we're going to be really good at what we can do, and we're going to control the things we can control, which is mistakes, it's penalties, it's mental errors, and we're going to just play good, tough, hard football. And I think that's the identity that Fickell wants to have, but there's a little bit of a disconnect right now with who they want to be and who they are. And I don't know if it's because of the offense that they're trying to implement here with the air raid, where they want to throw a lot of passes. And so they really are struggling to kind of throw the ball down the field, which if you want to be a good team running the football, that's great. Play ball control, play tough defense. Don't make mistakes, right? Way too many mistakes, turnovers, penalties, mental errors, right? But also you need to find a way to manufacture some big plays, because when you are playing against a team like in Alabama, you're going to have to take some shots and get that secondary to back up a little bit. Give yourself some space, because it is really hard, no matter who you're playing against, to run against an eight-man box to consistently move the ball down the field to score points. So I think that's probably one of the biggest conversations that they're having when they have their coaches' meetings and with their players, is like, we can't have critical moment mistakes. Like, that will kill us in big games. And so trying to reinforce that and then showing us on Saturdays as fans is the most important thing that I think this team can do the rest of the season.
And I think, Joe, you started to kind of hit on the head some of the frustrations that at least I have, that I don't think that like the air raid can't work in the Big Ten, especially the way it's been done now, or even this new defense. The frustrating part is because there's been a lack of execution and, you know, mistakes, all these sorts of things, but there's a big miss on defense and all of a sudden there's a big play. So it's even hard, and I'm sure it's harder for the coaches to know, are the players you're recruiting, is that going to work in Wisconsin? Is this offense and defense going to work in Wisconsin when they can't do the simple stuff? And because then all of a sudden it all looks blown up. Injuries don't help either, but that's got to be the hardest part, is figuring out, is this the coach is not getting the players to be tighter and executing better? Is this sloppiness from the players, or is this the scheme? And that's the part you don't want to be in going into your fourth game in year two.
Yeah, and you need a big sample size to be able to tell, like, okay, are these turnovers, are these penalties because of, you know, a one-off situation where a player made a boneheaded mistake, or is this something that's within the culture, the thread work of the way it's being taught and being emphasized? Because I had nine offensive coordinators in the NFL because we weren't very good, so we fired them every year. But along the way, we had some good things that I was able to take from them, and one of the coordinators – I forget who it was. Sorry to that person, because it was a great quote. But they say you can't emphasize everything. You're going to get what you coach and what you emphasize, but you can't emphasize everything. So you have to decide what that is. And I think the good thing and the bad thing about the air raid offense is it puts a lot of trust in your quarterback, right? But if your quarterback gets hurt, you better have that backup ready to be able to execute at a high level, because there's a lot of short passes. And so you have to be very crisp with the details, because you can't afford anything but a high completion percentage, because your 5-yard pass is only completed 50 or 60% of the time. That's like a 3-yard run, which is not good enough. You have to run the ball for 4 yards to be efficient. So when you look at, like, just from a strictly numbers statistics standpoint, if you're throwing a lot of 5-yard passes, that's fine, but you got to complete like 90% of them. And that requires a high level of detail in the passing game. That requires your receivers to see the defense the same way that your quarterback does. And your quarterback's got to be accurate. He's got to be quick with his decisions, and he's got to get the football out of his hand. But then you also have to take occasionally some shots down the field. But too many times we're throwing the ball on the outside right now, and we're gaining 0 yards or 1 yard passing it, which is just not good enough, right? You might as well just run the ball and be what Wisconsin used to be for all these years, as just a smash mouth, run the ball down your throat, take some shots and play action and play really hard, tough defense. And so I think they need to get the details and the execution and the attention to detail from quarterback to receiver if they want to be an air raid offense.
Joe, one of the strongest pipelines that Wisconsin has that you trailblazed in a lot of ways too is offensive linemen and running backs, and particularly offensive linemen. And so I got to know, how would you feel about playing in the air raid system? Let's say that you were being recruited, you're going to go to Wisconsin, you're an offensive lineman. How would you view and how would you feel personally about playing in that system compared to a, you know, more traditional, potentially run heavy, more pro style offense?
My son's 8. He's playing quarterback on his flag team, so I'm not ready to like try to groom him into being a lineman, but putting myself in his shoes in 10 years, let's just say he's being recruited to be an offensive lineman. It wouldn't bother me, and I wouldn't hesitate one bit to come play at Wisconsin in the air raid as an offensive lineman, because they're still teaching pro-style techniques. And if you have a kid, or if you're a player, you know, coming out of high school, and you have aspirations to be in an NFL offensive lineman, the air raid doesn't bother me the way that Wisconsin's running it, is because they're still teaching pro-style pass pro techniques and run blocking techniques. And it's still an offense that has enough variety in their run game that you're going to be a developed and a polished offensive lineman when you leave in 4 years. So that really doesn't bother me too much. And actually, I think they have a really solid offensive line. I think they're developing those guys and they're doing a good job. But now it's just a matter of kind of putting together what's our identity on offense. If it is air raid and short passes, then we got to complete a lot of them. But if we're not good at that, maybe we just need to pivot a little bit, and we can still use the same personnel groupings and the formations, but we're just going to smash it down your throat a little bit more. And then we're going to take a few more shots down the field and not put so much on our quarterback.
Well, Joe, it's awesome to have you back in Madison. Awesome to have you back on the air. I do want to point out, and I think there's like a Twitter, like Room Raider, your room that you're doing your, this was like a COVID thing, but it's still been out there, where you're broadcasting from is amazing. What's your, before we let you go, like what's the, your favorite thing behind you? Because there's so many cool things.
Yeah, a lot of cool things. This is a relic from when I was doing Thursday Night Football during COVID, and literally every pregame, halftime, and postgame show I did from my office. And it was a very sad period of my life, like a lot of people, because my whole family was asleep, and I was sitting here yelling into a microphone at 12:30 at night going over the Thursday Night Football highlights. But I think the things, I mean, there's a lot of things that are really special, but I'll go real quick. So I got my Hall of Fame bust here, which is not the actual bus, but it's the replica that they give to all the players. And that yellow blanket, it's it's not my kid's blanket. It's actually the blanket that went over the bust before we unveiled it at my Hall of Fame. And then that guitar right there at Cleveland Browns home games, one of the things that they started last year, or I can't remember exactly. I think it was last year. After going to Germany, like my years really got messed up, because living abroad for nine months really screwed me up. But the tradition they have is they bring somebody out a lot of times, like celebrity or a former player or something. And right before kickoff, you go up on stage and you smash a guitar, because, you know, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, that association. So that was cool. So I got to be the first person to do that. Or maybe I was the second person to do that. But kind of pretty, kind of cool. They gave me the guitar that I got to smash and pretend to be a rock star for a day.
That is awesome, Joe. Thank you so much for hopping on and talking Badgers with us.
Thanks, Joe.
Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right.